day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Abortion. Just that word evokes so many different emotions and thoughts in Americans. And for nearly 50 years, we have had a blazing cultural war, really, over the idea of when, how, and who gets to decide whether a woman has to carry a pregnancy to term. The U.S. Supreme Court seemed to pour gasoline on that war this spring when it issued its opinion in the Dobbs case. The court decided that the law of the land since 1973 was wrong, and that states should be able to decide on their own whether a woman has to carry a pregnancy to term. That has set up an incredible number of showdowns this fall, first of all, as we head back to the ballot box for midterm elections. Lots of states have questions about how far to go. Should abortion be legal? Should it be illegal? And where on the broad spectrum between those two poles should the law be? Every day right now, I think people are thinking about and hearing about abortion, talking about it in very heated ways, much more heated than they were just 6 or 8 months ago. And on this program, because of the outlook we have here, because of the kinds of things we talk about and value, we tend to hear mostly from pro-choice individuals, people who believe that this is a matter for women to decide on their own in a medical sense with their doctors and in a private sense with their families. That's also reflective of the majority opinions, at least if you begin to believe the polls. Most people believe that a woman should have a right to decide when and whether to have a child. But of course, that's not everybody. There's a significant minority of people who believe that abortion is an unjust decision, both for the mother and the fetus. There are people who believe it's murder to end a pregnancy. And in order to have this conversation, in order to frame it and be able to take account of both sides, we need to better understand that other position. And we need to understand that it's a position that now rules over millions of Americans and has a majority among the members of the U.S. Supreme Court. Detroit Today producer Sam Corey recently sat down with pro-life activist Monica Miller, who teaches at Sacred Heart Major Seminary here in Detroit and is the author of Abandoned, The Untold Story of the Abortion Wars. In their conversation, Sam tries to more clearly understand how Dr. Miller became part of the pro-life movement and why she has continued to fight in its favor for so many decades.
Just to start here, how did your pro-life beliefs form? Where did they exactly originate from?
Well, I guess I can say that when all is said and done, I've never been in favor of abortion. And I think probably I could attribute that to my upbringing. I was raised Roman Catholic, and I just innately believed that there has to be something wrong with killing an unborn child. So I don't have a dramatic conversion story, when it comes to my views on the subject. However, my awareness of the injustice of abortion certainly grew, evolved, and developed. And when I was 21 years old, I was college student at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois. I was getting a degree in theater, and I went on a retreat at the Newman Center. I met a woman on this retreat. Her name was Shirley Parks, and she was involved in something called the pro-life movement. And that was, I mean, this is 3 years after Roe versus Wade was already decided. But I became friends with Shirley Parks, and she really introduced me to involvement in the movement. I palled around with her. She took me to meetings. She took me to debate. And she gave me some very good books to read. And one of them was published before Roe versus Wade, and that was a book called Abortion and Social Justice. And it's an anthology. And one of the chapters in that book was written by a physician named Bart Heffernan. And the name of that chapter was The Early Biography of Every Man. So it was a very close examination of fetal development. And this just totally blew me away. I had no idea, and maybe most people still don't, sad to say, but no idea of the complexity, the dynamics of the development of an unborn child. I came away from reading that chapter with a very deep interior awareness that when we're dealing with an unborn child, we're dealing with a personal someone, an other in relationship to me and to the rest of humanity. These are not aliens. These are not things. The unborn child is not an intruder, not an invader into our space, but a true someone in relationship to me and the rest of the human race. And this just solidified my opposition to abortion and also motivated me to become more involved in the pro-life movement.
Dr. Miller, yeah, I mean, you've been in the pro-life movement for a very long time now. One of the things that I'm curious about, you had an interesting change or switch over. You're part of theater and studied theater in undergrad. And, you know, the theater groups, and I think at least the way you described it, was very different than, you know, the pro-life movement and those groups that you associated with. Yeah. What were you taken by in the pro-life movement? I'm curious what those groups seemed to offer you or what kind of richness or depth did you get into with them?
I had rediscovered my Catholic faith when I was 21 years old. And that made a big difference in terms of my outlook on what was really important. And I had a dramatic shift. I have no question about that. From theater to theology, going through the THs. Okay, but I decided to drop theater. It was a very difficult time in my life trying to understand who I was, what was my future. And I decided to move to Chicago, and I applied to Loyola University in Chicago and started to study theology there. And so I had a very definite shift.
If you're just listening, I'm speaking to Dr. Monica Miller. She's the director of Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. She now teaches at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit and is most recently the author of Abandon, the Untold Story of the Abortion Wars. Dr. Miller, I'm curious to kind of get your reaction, what it felt like for you when you heard about Roe being overturned in the Dobbs decision. I know this was a very polarizing decision. A lot of Americans were certainly really sad and are still reeling from it. And and many others are happy and rejoicing. It's a bit celebratory for them. I'm curious what the reaction was like for you.
I'll be honest. The first reaction I had is I cried. I can almost cry now, but I couldn't believe it. After almost 50 years and my involvement literally over four decades, that this decision was going to vanish, in a sense, overturned, reversed. My second reaction was a sense of sorrow and, frankly, a sense of mourning. One of the quotations from the Alito opinion that was finding its way into just about all media reports that Roe versus Wade was egregiously wrongly decided from the start. That's practically a verbatim quote. Egregiously wrongly decided from the start. So that was kind of my second reaction to it, a kind of mourning and for the loss of these lives and the hurt and the brokenness that is caused to so many women that I actually talk about in my book. And then I wrote an article for Crisis Magazine on the Dobbs decision. And, you know, it's one thing to reverse Roe versus Wade, but my argument is that Roe versus Wade is not just a legal opinion. Roe versus Wade presents us with a kind of philosophy. It presents us with a kind of ethic on the meaning of human relatedness. And this radical individualism, this radical autonomy, the isolation from one human being to the other is the ethic of Roe v. Wade. And that still needs to be overcome. Mm. You can reverse the law, but you have to reverse the meaning of the law in order for us to build a culture that is truly inclusive, truly welcoming, and understands that human beings have responsibilities one to the other, beginning, frankly, with the giving of life.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Miller, I want to hold a little bit on culture and, I guess, beliefs in America, because I think this is interesting. I know, you know, the belief in pro-life and the belief that not an infant but a fetus is a human life with full legal rights and priorities. This is a very strong conviction of yours. It's pretty central to a lot of your thinking. Most people in America, they're a little bit uncomfortable with abortion, but they want abortion or abortion access. With certain boundaries, and particularly after the first trimester, these opinions change. But I'm curious why you think that. I'm curious why you think most Americans want access to abortion, why they think that's important, and why they think that's moral and just, which I know is very different than your worldview. But I'm curious how you digest that or what you make of it.
I think that people are afraid of losing control. And abortion, legalized abortion, represents a kind of control over one's own life and then over the lives of others. And so abortion is a way for us to maintain control, maintain a kind of personal security. We don't like it when others tell us what to do. We kind of saw that with the COVID thing, right? Even, you know, wearing a mask or not wearing a mask. So I think there's a lot of that motivation. If we don't have access to abortion, we've lost control.
One of the things I want to ask you about is, and I know you acknowledge this, and I guess I'm curious to the degree to which it kind of concerns you, and I think folks who are pro-life in general, which is that pregnancy can be quite dangerous. The Dobbs decision is estimated to increase maternal morbidity and mortality. As it stands right now, about 1 in 5 pregnant people experience significant complications. About 1 in 4,000 dies during pregnancy. In childbirth or shortly after delivering, including 1 in 1,800 Black mothers specifically. I'm curious where this becomes uncomfortable for you to the rights and liberties and freedoms of the mother, the or the individual that is pregnant. I know that you believe very deeply that abortion is murder and that you're taking away a life, but there are a lot of times, I mean, an uncomfortable number of times where it really does threaten another person's life as well, which is the mother's. And I'm curious what you make of that.
It's very interesting that you're talking about this because I had a life-threatening pregnancy myself.
Wow.
My son Patrick was born a month early in an emergency C-section because I had a placenta abruption, and I could have died and he could have died.
Mm.
So this does become very personal even to me. Thank God I got rushed to the hospital in time. In fact, the physicians said, God bless that man. He saved me and he saved Patrick because he knew exactly what to do and he didn't hesitate. Mm. But he said another 10 minutes and the outcome wouldn't have been so good. Mm. I think we have to do all that we can to save both the mother and the child without doing any direct attack on both. Human life, innocent human life, the ethics of that, every innocent human being, their life is inviolable. Now, having said that, I can tolerate certainly laws that will, shall I say it, directly attack the unborn child to save the mother. I don't think it's ethical, but I understand why we need that. And the woman does have a right to defend herself. But even having said that, I think this is a kind of an important point. The unborn child is not an unjust aggressor against his mother, his or her mother. And I think we still have to acknowledge that, mourn that, that we're dealing with a true loss in a complex situation of indeed conflict between the life of the mother and the unborn child.
You know, Dr. Miller, one of the things that I've been thinking about is a theater friend you've spoke in your book, Sheila, who, you know, is pro-life, or at least she had an abortion. One of the things I think about these days is just how much we moralize and think socially, right? We are really social creatures, deeply so. And so the people around us, what their beliefs are, we oftentimes share, or at least they're sort of interspliced with our own in pretty interesting and complex and deep ways. I'm curious if you have friends and family members that are pro-choice that you talk to about this. And I know this is on the other side too. I mean, we're becoming a more polarized society. And so in that sense, we don't have friends who have different views from us oftentimes. That's just true across the board. And I'm curious in your case, if you have sincere, deep relationships with folks who are pro-choice, and if you discuss these things, if you openly talk about
them. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, the answer is yes. And I can talk about my sister. Mm. My sister supports legalized abortion, but we love each other and we respect each other, and we can talk about it. And I try to always keep the avenues of communication open. And anyone who wants, conversations I've had with, maybe they're not close friends or relatives, but when you're out on the street, let's say in front of an abortion clinic, or you're at a pro-life demonstration, and members of the other side show up, I've had some very, very deep, very long conversations with them to try to convince them, to listen to their arguments, hopefully to give them something to think about as we part our ways. So I think that is important to try to be open, to try to understand, to try to listen, and hopefully that they will be listening to me and to us.
Dr. Miller, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate the time.
And I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks very much to Detroit Today's producer, Sam Corey, who did that interview with Monica Miller about abortion and abortion politics. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by two journalists who are covering this issue going into the fall elections, both from the standpoint here in Michigan and nationally. And we want to start to hear from you. Talk about where you are on abortion rights. Are you looking at the possible ballot initiative in this fall and thinking that it will be the final word here in Michigan about abortion? Or do you think that this is just the beginning of a new round of fighting over this critical right? We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.